America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Welcome back to Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. I am Dan Canobio. He is Chris Algieri, former 140-pound world champion, all-around pundit of the sport now. And we are still buzzing off of Alexander Usyk's unbelievable win over Tyson Fury. David beats Goliath. Usyk becomes the undisputed heavyweight champion for about 2 weeks before the IBF strips him. But we're not going to talk about that nonsense. We're going to talk about one of the best heavyweight fights of the last 25 years. It delivered. I'm so excited. These are the type of episodes where I run to the microphone. Chris, how are you? Are you still feel? Because I am very feel.
Yeah, I do. I can't stop smiling. This is awesome. Boxing is healthy. We have an undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. Excuse me. And the fight was awesome. Like, what more? I mean, I feel like I'm getting greedy, because not only did we get the first undisputed heavyweight champion in the last 25 years, not only was it between two undefeated guys who are both excellent, not only did they both show up and perform great, but the fight was awesome. It was entertaining. It was edge of your seat the entire time. It ended great. I'm over the moon about it.
Yeah, I like to look at things from the perspective of what's healthiest for the sport. Yes, I'm a fan, of course, but it's also like I work in this business. A lot of my success in this as a career is dictated on the health of the sport. And how many times have we been given like a mega fight, whether it's Mayweather, Pacquiao, or it's any of the Mayweather fights, or Fury, Wilder 2, or Fury Wilder 3 was awesome. Fury Wilder 2 was also good too. But like, this one was the heavyweight championship of the world. And it was hyped up. It had four titles on the line, and it delivered. Like you said, there was no controversy.
Crawford Spence, like, we expected this great fight, and it sucked. It was a
right. There was no controversy in this one. No controversy. The judges got it right. There was a decisive moment in the ninth round where there was a little bit of controversy, but we got to see the final round. We'll get into all that. But yeah, from a standpoint of boxing, we're in the middle of this unbelievable run. We're in the middle of this unbelievable 18-month run. To see a heavyweight title fight being discussed on SportsCenter all night long, to see friends texting me, oh my God, what a fight, to see these Instagram accounts that are not just boxing accounts posting Fury getting wobbled, posting Usyk, fans that don't know about Usyk's legend now becoming very familiar with it, fans now invested in a rematch because it was such a close fight and it was a little bit of controversy in that ninth round with Fury getting bounced around the ring like a pinball. Good for the sport. Health of the sport is thriving. We're in the middle of a great run, and it's going to keep on going. Thanks to everyone that was in the PPV.com chat. It was a long one, and it was a very fun one. It was a great card, top to bottom. There were a lot of upsets, and it was really cool to interact with the fans. PPV.com obviously is our presenting sponsor, and we'll be back in that chat on June 15th for Gervonta Davis versus Frank Martin, Benavidez versus Vodzik. That's the next big one with PPV.com, and as you know, no subscriptions. You just go ahead and stream it to your phone. I was watching it on my computer for a little bit. Then I popped it onto the big screen for the main event. And then I still had the chat going. It's just so easy to switch between all your different devices. Very clear stream. Fun times. Once again, thank you to our sponsors at PPV.com. They are simply the best. All right, Chris, let's get into the fight.
Talk about the chat. Yesterday's chat was a lot of fun. I mean, Kevin Ioli was great in the chat there. And yeah, to your point, Dan, when you have ability to do two devices at once. I was watching the big screen, but I was typing on my computer. Then my computer died. And then I'm like, all right, boom. I go right to my phone, and I didn't miss a beat. And sorry for the guys who missed me during the chat for a stretch there. There was a technical difficulty. I was tweeting.
Was not you.
I was tweeting into the void or texting into the void. I felt really dumb because I thought I was saying like really, really poignant things. And I'm like, no one's responding to this. I'm like, well, I guess some of these.
Texting into the void. That's into Chris's void. Next book. The title of Chris's next book. No. I think you've always gotten text back. You're the one leaving people on red. Like, you know,
It might be my nickname, actually. Chris
Ghosting? Red Algieri. Chris left you on Red Algieri, the ghost.
The ghost.
It was a good time. It was a good time. Ioli was like kind of leading the charge, and we were giving our opinions. As the fight got closer to the main event, the uptick in the chat was just and people just interacting right away and like giving my scorecard. Really fun. Let's get into an actual fight. Like, I gave a lot of the early rounds to Fury. I thought he came out and really established that jab.
I'm listening to you. I'm like, what is this guy watching?
I know. I did something I usually don't
hedging
really do.
Bet,
I,
this guy. You guys, you hear that? You hear that? He's hedging his own bet.
Oh, do you want to talk about that right away and get that out of here? You picked Usyk. We're now partnered with DraftKings. It's out there. It's out there. Chris picked Usyk. He is now up 1-0 on our DraftKings campaign. I went with Fury on points, which was plus money. Your Usyk money line, it paid out like big time. So congrats. All right. Bragging rights here. We're now have this whole campaign going with DK. You're up 1-0 on me. I got to get a big win on June 15th.
But not for nothing. Like, listen, I didn't care who won the fight. I don't care about my bet. I care about the fight. I care, like you said, the health of the sport. This guy, he cares about his bet. He's like, oh, Fury. I'm like, whoa.
Dude, Fury points for plus 200 is like, I told my brother to do it. He texted me. He goes, you owe me money. I said, it was a close fight. He goes, close doesn't pay my mortgage.
He said, you owe me money.
He goes, close doesn't pay my mortgage, Dan.
Last week you were saying people wanted to send you money. Now you owe, see, this is how
that's the beauty of gambling.
Betting is tough.
It's the beauty of gambling. And shout out to DraftKings, who is now the official sports book of Inside Boxing Live. Yeah, they've Inside Boxing. We have a lot of cool things coming your way that way. Yeah, so I had Fury.
I'm a competitor, so any reason to...
Well, that's what they said. They're like, how do you want to do your social things? I was like, well, I know Chris is a competitor. I think it's cool to go head-to-head. So at least it's not always on me to make my picks. Now, maybe you can lose some picks, and then it doesn't... I got to get back in the win column on June 15th with Tank and Vodzikar.
It's so nice to be a front runner. So nice to be ahead.
Right?
Right out of the gate.
Did you pick Fury on your other show?
So I picked Fury. I did an article 2 weeks ago, and I picked Fury. And I picked Fury on points, and I thought it was going to be a rough fight. But then but I say it all the time, guys. Like, when fights are really close, it comes down to, you know, the last minute. But listen, once I said it on our show, I stuck with it. And I said,
yes.
I stuck with it.
People, I mean, put it out there. Yep.
As soon as it was out there, I stuck with Usyk because
I
had a gut feeling for the last 2 weeks, and it wasn't strong enough until this week, until we did our show. That was the very first time where I said it audibly. I'm like, you know what? I got Usyk.
Yeah, through 8 rounds, I had Fury winning 6 of the 8 rounds. I was getting a lot of flack on Twitter because I was putting my scorecard out there.
Would you have 6-2? It was either 6-2 or 5-2.
Right, it wasn't like that crazy. I probably gave Fury the two of the first 3 rounds, where some people gave Usyk 2 of the first 3 rounds. I just thought Fury came out with a very active jab. I thought he was feinting more. I thought Usyk was not able to get inside on Fury. I didn't think Fury was doing anything special in there. He was just a little more active and obviously in that better shape. And then the middle rounds came, and Fury, like, I think from like rounds 4, 5, 6. Was just kind of like
I wrote it down because I actually gave
he was kind of just like breezing, like walking away with it. And I thought after 8, I was like, oh man, like this fight, you know, this unless Usyk can do something demonstrative, which he did in that 9th round, like Fury just going to keep doing this every round, and we're going to get ourselves like a 8-4, 9-3 unanimous decision win for Fury. But obviously Usyk turned it on. But early on, like, what did you see from Fury, and what went wrong for him?
Well, I actually gave the first 3 rounds to Usyk. I thought the body work that he was
3-0?
Yeah, 3-0 in the first 3 rounds.
And I will say that the commentators were not giving Usyk any credit for the body work. He was tapping the body. First punch he landed was a body shot.
It was in the first 10 seconds, and he landed a hard straight left hand to the body. The issue in the beginning for me was it just looked like Usyk couldn't hurt him. And like, even with all those shots he was landing at the body, he was consistent with the body. Throwing a straight left hand to the body, touching him with the right hand as well. So I gave him a lot of credit for the body work in the beginning, those first 3 rounds, because there wasn't a whole lot going on. So I thought the stiffer, harder punches were being landed by Usyk. So those first 3 rounds, which arguably it could be 2-1 there. I gave 3-0, but it definitely could have been 2-1. But I thought Usyk was definitely winning those first couple rounds. And then I had Fury dominating 4, 5, 6, 7. It was hands down. And it looked like he was on his way to stopping Usyk. That right uppercut that he was winging and landing at times, and the right hands that he was splitting the guard with, I mean, he found, once he had his rhythm and his timing, Fury is a nightmare. He is so.
And he was getting into that rhythm.
Yeah, fluid and athletic, and I'm watching this, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, it's just the size, the athleticism, everything that we said going into the fight. And I'm like, and then I made a point. I was like, he just can't hurt him, and that's the problem. Usyk's landing good punches, especially to the body, but he's not getting respect from Fury. And until he gets the respect, like, this is going to be a one sided fight basically from here on out. And then boom, he hurts him, and the whole fight changed.
That's what I mean, hurt, like.
The whole fight changed.
The nose. Yeah, the nose. There was a few things. But the nose, and I think Fury just at 35, he just kind of slows. He's going to slow down now. He's going to slow down a little bit. And he just didn't have that same snap on his jab, didn't have that same movement. A number of things. So heading into that eighth round, I think we can all be in agreement that the first three rounds were nip and tuck. You can, you know, I was probably wrong, I'll admit it, to have Fury taking two of those. I mean, Usyk maybe took two of the first three. You had Usyk taking all three. But you cannot deny that Fury took over in those middle rounds, and there was a lot of momentum on his side.
Dominating.
And that's when I was like, okay, he's going to run away with this because Usyk, like you said, can't hurt him, can't get inside. Something has to happen. Does Usyk at age 37 still have that crazy clutch gene where he just like steps into overdrive? Usually he does it in the 10th round and on. This time he did it in the 8th round and on. And then he just – the ninth round is just – it literally was a jaw-dropping moment for me where it was just like, what the heck just happened? He just clocks Fury, perfect shot right on the chin. And we've seen Fury hurt in fights, right? We've seen him dropped by Wilder. We've seen him dropped by Cunningham. He's been dropped by other fighters as well. We have never seen him that hurt. We have never seen him pinballing around the ring, eyes rolling to the back of his head. Referee could have stopped. That's the biggest controversial moment of this fight. Let's talk about it. The ninth round. Mark Nelson, I think, ultimately made the right decision. He gave him the 10 count. You could have made a case that they could have stopped the fight right then and there. It would have been a very controversial stoppage. We got four more rounds of boxing. Fury recovered and actually won a round late. What did you think of that ninth round? What was your reaction? What did Usyk do to change the momentum of the fight?
For once, the referee did everything right, I thought. I thought there was no argument in everything he did. I think it was handled brilliantly in a high-stakes moment and a moment where I think a lot of people would have dropped the ball. I think that was handled perfectly. Yeah, you score the knockdown. Guys, if the ropes are holding you up, it's a knockdown. If the ropes weren't there, it's a knockdown.
But multiple. He went to two sides of the ring, Chris.
Yeah, I know
two times.
A lot of people don't understand that rule because I was listening to – people talking and people texting and whatever. That is a rule. If the ropes are, if anything is holding you up before you go down, that is a knockdown. And it doesn't necessarily, you don't have to actually hit the floor for it to be a knockdown. So that ruling was good. And I think it was a good idea to not stop the fight and actually give the count, give the eight count. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, look where we ended up. So obviously it was the right call. Fury was able to recover. Fury was able to come back and win. I thought he won the 12th round. I thought he dug deep and was able to come back and win some of those later rounds. He actually hurt Usyk a few times as well after that. So the proof is in the pudding, guys. Like, you watch the rest of the fight. It wasn't like Fury was getting beat all over the ring, getting like damaged. You know, after the fight, he was like, yeah, he even said in the interview, he's like, hey, man, look at me. I got busted up, whatever. He's talking very pointed.
Fight.
Very
it was clean, a fight.
Very smart. He's like, it's a fight. He's like, I got busted up.
He said one thing after the fight that kind of annoyed me. He brought up the Ukraine war. He kind of like intimated that the judges, he didn't say the judges, but like everyone out there.
I didn't see that part, but.
He kind of intimated that the public was with Usyk because of the Ukraine war.
I thought that too is one of the reasons why I picked him.
Yeah, but it's not because of the war. The public is with Usyk because everyone's just tired of your antics, Fury. Like, they're like, you have one guy who never talks and has just done nothing but win and do it on the road and do it with pride. Cool. Usyk. Then you have the other guy who's giving interviews, who's
grabbing the ropes and going, ooh, every time.
Just being Fury. I mean, you need both. You need all this in boxing, but Fury's not for everyone. So I understand fighters are going to say wild shit seconds after the fight ends. I don't think we should be interviewing them. We do get some wild, crazy moments. But going back to the knockdown.
I thought he was great in the press conferences when he's just like, hey, listen. He's like, look at my face. He's like, I got
right. Anything. When they calm down a little bit. But the minutes, the seconds right after.
It's a great fight.
Did you like putting a microphone in your face?
Yeah, bro, I've been there. It's terrible. You're
in the ring?
Yeah, you're concussed as well. That's another crazy thing is you're interviewing guys who literally their brains are scrambled because, listen, every fight, even fights you don't get hurt, fights you get dropped, like you got a punch in your head for 12 rounds. 12 rounds is a real long time. So, and then we're sitting there putting monkey friends in their face like, what do you think happened? You know,
yeah, right? And like Rolly, I think of that Rolly interview after the Pitbull fight where he was like, happy Easter, everyone. Like, it's just weird. It's just boxing and no one cares. Yeah. But to go back to the knockdown and the ropes, obviously the ropes cannot keep you up. It was just, well, it was more than just him falling into one side of the ring. He fell into multiple sides of the ring. And it was, he was this close. I think Nelson was like about to, like, he had his hand ready to stop it. And then he made a very wise choice. I think in the moment, everyone was like, all right, you could probably stop it. Afterwards, please, I think everyone realized, right? Everyone afterwards, like, okay, let's not. A good move, Mark Nelson. There's a reason they flew you in for this fight because you're a really good referee.
Excellent. Amazing.
Yeah. So, but going back to what Usyk did, it came the round before that in round eight where he had some success. What did he do? Because I saw him changing levels in the seventh and eighth round. I saw him getting off that center line. I saw him landing that overhand left like a missile, like a rangefinder on the bigger Fury. I feel like Usyk made an adjustment in round seven and eight where he just started to get back to what has made him great, and that's changing levels and being pesky.
Well, he did that in the first round, too. If you remember, he landed a really nice overhand left on Usyk.
Yeah.
Changing levels. So he kept he was going straight left hand to the body, straight left hand to the body. He's throwing some right hooks, too, jabbing to the body hard. Boom, boom, boom. And then he changed levels and threw over the top. Boom. And he actually caught Tyson early on. That's when Tyson, like, stuck his tongue out and put his hands out. I thought he actually got rocked a little bit early on. And he did that again in the second round. And then he kind of got away from that for a few rounds because Tyson just got on his flicking, sticking, moving Muhammad Ali stuff, and Usyk needed to make an adjustment, and he did, and he went back to that level change in overhand, but also he countered the right uppercut from Fury, which was a deadly weapon all night long. How do you counter a right uppercut coming from an orthodox position? If you're a southpaw, it's a right hook, and that's not a punch that Usyk's really known for. So if you think about it, so I'm a righty hand. This is my right hand. If I'm throwing this punch, this uppercut, especially the way Tyson does it, where he's not super tight, he's got this hand down, that right hook comes in this way. Mm-hmm. So he starts throwing that right hook, and that became a big weapon even late, 11, 10, 11, 12. And that's not a punch that Usyk's really known for, that like slicing, cutting, check right hook from a southpaw, which is a very dangerous punch. Remember, DeMarcus Corley rocked Floyd Mayweather with that punch. The right hook from a southpaw,
chop, chop.
One of the most dangerous punches around. And I've never seen that from Usyk, and he used that to counter that right uppercut that Fury was finding a home for more and more as the fight was going on. I thought Usyk was going to get stopped with the right uppercut because Fury was throwing it from such wild positions, and his timing was getting closer and tighter, and he was throwing it with bad intentions and with good hand speed. But Usyk made an adjustment, and this fight was all about adjustments. I think these guys matched wits and were like tit for tat the entire time. And then it just came down to it's nuts and guts. It's about the balls. Who's got what?
Yeah. Nuts and guts. Awesome. First seven rounds were like kind of like a chess match. It was Fury doing what we thought Fury was going to do. And then from the eighth round on, Usyk outlanded Fury every round, 24-16 in that decisive ninth round, 16-4 in the 10th. They got the final stats here. It was actually Usyk that outlanded Fury, and Fury was outlanding Usyk the entire fight. Fury threw more punches, which was somewhat shocking. It was mostly the jab department where Fury just threw over 100 more jabs.
He's got quick hands. He throws combinations. So,
but it was Usyk that landed more power shots. 170 punches landed on Fury, the most of his career, and it comes from Alexander Usyk. Those are the final stats. The final scorecards were 115-112 Usyk, 114-113 Usyk, 114-113 Fury. I had it 114-113. I had it six rounds apiece, with the knockdown being the decisive moment for Usyk to win. I think you said you had it 115-112, right?
Yeah, I had 7-5 plus the knockdown, 115-112.
It's fine.
But I could easily see your scorecards. I gave him the first three. But 2-1 Usyk in the first three rounds, I was literally neck and neck on a couple of those rounds.
There was a lot of close rounds.
Especially, I think it was the third that I think Fury probably was the closest to getting in my book, and I still gave it to Usyk. But if that was a Fury round, I'm where you are, 6-6 with a knockdown.
Yeah, but Usyk gets his hand raised.
It's funny going back and this morning and I watch it again. I'm like, shit, this is really close. Like the knockdown really did decide this fight.
It's crazy when you put your scorecard out there into the public, like I did on Twitter. It's like there's people, like I figured there's fan, like there's legit Fury fans, there's legit Fury haters. There's people telling me to quit my job. There's people telling me I can't believe you get paid to do this. You suck. Just hang it up. I'm like, what? This is a close fight, like 6-6, 7-5. Like it doesn't get any closer than that. Like people had Fury running away with her. People had Usyk. Through six rounds, winning five of the six.
I love the people. We got a fight that universally everyone says is a really close fight. Vegas says it's a close fight. Right. Everyone's split, and we got our predictions, and people are like, this guy shouldn't even be able to talk anymore. And okay, someone said that about my prediction that Usyk's going to win. And it's like, and then people came out there, they're like, oh, what are you going to say about this now? Like, obviously.
Right? I know. It's fun. It's fun because in one way, it's just like great to have a bunch of people like, you know, looking at what you have to say and all that. It makes the sport go round and round. I have fun with it. People are telling me I should quit my job, and I just write back, that's not nice. I'm not going to like, like, come on, bro. This is just it's just boxing. It's a subjective sport.
Kids to feed. Come on.
Yeah, let me have a living. I'm not going to go to your job where you work and do that to you, but I understand the nature of what we do. We're putting ourselves out there. Let's get into the fun stuff. Usyk's legend. I mean, the guy has nothing left to prove. We're talking about a cruiserweight undisputed champion who beat them one by one. We're talking about a guy who went up to heavyweight, and it was a slow play until he got to Joshua, beats him twice decisively, goes up and beats Fury and hands Fury the first L of his career. There are people out there that looked at Fury as the best of this generation. No longer. It is without a doubt that Alexander Usyk is the best heavyweight of this era. He's arguably the best fighter of this era. And he did it, Chris, inside of the ring. We live in an era where we're debating on Twitter. We're debating on podcasts. Mythical this, mythical that. Who would beat who? Usyk is just going in there and taking souls one by one, fight by fight, in their hometowns for the most part. And he just left no doubt. He is not just the best heavyweight. He's one of the best fighters, and he's an all-time great. There's not enough superlatives out there for Usyk right now. He's just a legend, and it's amazing that we get to watch him during this era.
There's an argument right now that he is the pound for pound king of the world. Like
Crawford thinks so.
Yeah, that right there. And my esteemed colleague Paulie Malignaggi brought it up, you know, before the fight. He goes, listen, he wins this fight. And he was like, we really got to rethink who we have as pound for pound king. So. This is where my twinge came from last week when I started thinking like, hey, Usyk can win this fight, and that's why I picked Usyk. I've seen him struggle as an amateur. I've seen him struggle at cruiserweight. I've seen him struggle at heavyweight mightily. I've never seen him lose. He has that ability, that other gear to find a way to win no matter what. He struggled at every level. Nothing has ever been easy for this man. He's never out there just cleaning clocks. Like, he has to figure it out every single time. And when you have someone who's used to being on the brink of failure so often, but has 100% accuracy rate, dude, that guy is another level. He's not used to losing. He's used to winning, but he's also not used to having it easy. He's very accustomed to dealing with resistance. He's very accustomed to being behind the eight ball. And that kind of experience, I mean, there's no words for that. This guy is something special. He can't be beat. He's that guy. And I've never said that to anybody. Like, until I see it, I don't think he can be beat.
Well, that's what makes him so admired by fans, what you just said. Like, he's not the biggest puncher. He's not just knocking guys out left and right.
Guy. He's not the biggest puncher. He's not the cleanest. None of that. He's
not the prettiest guy.
No, not at all.
He is, but he's respected. He's respected among boxing fans, which is almost impossible in today's era where it's just so divisive. There's just so many people out there that just hate this fighter, love this fighter. You cannot hate on Alexander Usyk. You cannot hate on this guy because of all the reasons you just said, because of how he did it at cruiserweight, how he's done it at heavyweight. For the most part, they're calling him the road warrior, right? Because he was going into the opponent's backyards and winning decisions, going into opponent's backyards and winning.
That cruiserweight run to collect all those titles was insane. If you really look back, which got missed by a lot of American fans, but no, his
well, the Super Six helped. Super Six helped put him on the map, but yeah. For the most part, he fought in relative anonymity. I mean, he's 37 years old too, which someone brought up on Twitter to me. Twitter's not always a horrible place. We have some of the best followers and audience. Someone said, "Hey Dan, like I feel like not a lot of people are talking about the fact that he just did this at 37 too, which is incredible. Obviously, Fury's 35 and slowing down a bit too, but." It's just there's not enough things you can say about the guy, and you can make a case for him as pound for pound number one. And Terrence Crawford, who is arguably number one right now, up there with Inoue. I think everyone has Inoue, Crawford, and Usyk somewhat in their 1-2-3. It changes, you know, every time each guy fights. Terrence Crawford tweeted, "Man, y'all better put some respect on Alexander Usyk. He definitely a candidate for number one pound for pound fighter in the world. I'm no hater. He beat the man. Who beat the man in a bigger division, given what he's already done. Salute, brother." And I just absolutely love that tweet right now. And it got me thinking about, we are in the midst of watching three all-time greats. Like, Terrence Crawford is an all-time great. Naoya Inoue, all-time great. Alexander Usyk, all-time great. I know we have to figure out who's the best. That's what we do as talking heads. Who's number one? How about just saying we're living in an era where these three guys are fighting every few months. These three guys are going to go down and going to be in the Hall of Fame. It's just an awesome time. And it's just, as a fan, just sit back and appreciate it.
How about that we have a 122-pounder, a 147-54-pounder, and a heavyweight. And
that's
those
beautiful.
Are all undefeated, tip of the iceberg, top apex predators in our sport. Boxing is alive and well, guys. We are.
Well, how about this too? Black guy from the U.S.
Japanese
fighter, and white Ukrainian guy who is just I am field. Well, that just shows you the sport too. That just shows
a black American. We got a Japanese guy who is a Japanese native, and then we have a Ukrainian. So we got America. We got Europe. We got. You know, we got the East. I mean, the world is the boxing world is alive and well, which is why you and I are so happy because we have so much.
It's a global sport.
We don't. Yeah, it's great. And we love all fighters. We love our sport. And it's just listen, we're in it, man. And we're boxing is in such a good place. The health of the sport is higher now than ever in my lifetime. I think. At least since.
Oh wow. You know? And you're usually pessimistic, CA.
Yeah, but I mean, like, we're having such a good run these past couple of years. And
big fight feels.
Yeah, maybe not my lifetime because the 80s were great, but I wasn't like I was 4 years old. I don't know.
You can make a case that we're in another golden era. Like, we're on 18 months now. This isn't like a one month, like, boxing for a while was one good year, one bad year, one good year, one bad year. We're on an 18 month run now. Like, we're from April of last year or even March of last year with Benavidez and Plant, right into Tank and Ryan, right into Crawford, Spence, right into Inoue and the heavyweights. And
yeah,
I'm probably leaving fights out.
Boxing was in a slump. Like we were in a bad spot. We
had no but if you, fight. If you just look at it for 18 months now, you know, there's no fall off and I don't see any sign of stoppage now with the emergence of Saudi Arabia, with the emergence of them bringing fights to the US, with the emergence of all these streaming platforms.
Yeah, and remember 5 months ago when Showtime went under and we're like, oh, end of an era, like no HBO, no Showtime. Like, oh, where's boxing going to go? We're stronger now than ever, guys.
Yeah. Someone always picks up the slack. There's too much money to be made. And right now, you know, DAZN and Saudis are kind of carrying it, you know, Top Rank still doing their thing. We'll get to those fights too. But just to put a button on Usyk's legend, I mean, what more can he do at this point, Chris? What more can Alexander Usyk do? He's 37 years old. He's dethroned Joshua. He's dethroned Fury. You know what he did at Cruiserweight. He's now the best heavyweight of this generation. There's no one really out there. There's no big fight out there besides a rematch with Fury. Should he retire on top? Should he fight Fury one more time? There's so many options for him. Him retiring on top and being just like maybe the second or third heavyweight to retire undefeated with all the belts would be so badass. But we've seen fighters not know when to walk away. He doesn't seem like a guy that would do that. I think he's pretty tired. It looks like he's pretty exhausted. But there's nothing left for Usyk to do, really. I think his legacy is set.
For those listening, I'm making
I was like, "Are we lose you?"
I'm making the money sign with the fingers. The only thing left for him to do is make more money. And the biggest money fight out there is going to be a rematch with Tyson Fury. And now he is going to be the quote unquote A side. He is the undisputed champion. He can garner a lot of that negotiation power. It's funny. So Paulie Malignaggi came over last night to watch yesterday afternoon to watch the fights at my place while we did a little cookout. And I had said to him before the fight happened, I go, and now this is not the best. It's kind of hard to say. So I said, you know what the best thing for boxing would be? And he goes, what, champ? And I go, that Usyk wins tonight. They have a rematch. So Usyk can make the money. And he loses the rematch. And then he doesn't. And then he retires. And then Fury goes and fights Joshua.
I think Fury's going to fight Joshua boxing, no matter what.
Boxing, yeah, I agree. But it'll be bigger if he gets the win over,
right,
over
Usyk, of course, in a
rematch. And then Usyk steps out. Because nobody wants to see Usyk Joshua again. I don't want to really even see a third Usyk. I mean, maybe not. Actually, these fights are pretty good. But yeah, I don't know how much longer. I don't want to see Usyk age out. I don't want to see Usyk when he turns 38 and hits that cliff that we all do, you know, once a certain age hits us. And you know, things are degrade really fast. But also, he could stop right now. He doesn't need to fight again, in which case we're probably still going to see Fury and Joshua because it's just a huge fight. But I would like to see him get that massive bag, get that rematch with Fury. And I don't even know if he, I wouldn't even say he probably wins it. I don't know.
Chris, you got $46 million for this. He got $46 million for that, for this fight.
Let's get $75 million for the next one.
Fury got $102 million.
Wow.
Right. You're right. It's always money. Money is.
So these guys split $150 million? Essentially?
Yeah.
They split $150
million. That was the report out there. There was a report out there that Fury got 100.
What are they making for this fight? I'm like, they're probably splitting like 75, maybe 100. They're splitting 150. Fuck. Excuse me.
Yeah. And the crowd was awesome. The crowd in Saudi was probably the most lit crowd there. It was awesome because of Fury. But yeah, it's the rematch, which I think he'll take the rematch. I think Usyk takes the rematch just for the money. I mean, that's why a lot of these fighters stick around. It's for money. Like he could make $75 million, and
we're looking at $100 million.
Right. In theory, yes, he should. In theory, Usyk should make the lion's share of the money. I don't know the details of the rematch. I know there is a rematch clause for Fury. We can talk about him now. His first loss, close fight, didn't make any excuses afterwards, besides that awkward line about Usyk in the war and everyone siding with him. I don't know if he meant the judges. I think that's silly. But now Fury has his first loss, a guy that we thought was invincible, but was definitely slowing down. The Ngannou fight left a lot in our minds, the knockdowns to Wilder. He was definitely the best heavyweight, I thought, but he was showed signs of slippage and had some flaws, just like every other fighter out there. I mean, he probably wants that rematch and get that win, but he's at the end of his rope too. 35, all the money in the world, clearly slowing down, mental, you know, all the things with Fury. The guy changes his mind day to day. It's kind of crazy to see a loss next to Fury's name, but you got to give him some respect too. This is a guy that always brings it. You may not like his antics, but he's important for the sport. He's fought Wilder in big fights, huge trilogy. Now he fights Usyk, which is going to be at least a rematch. I do think he'll fight Joshua too when it's all said and done. Fury is just a fighting guy, man. He's a fighter's fighter. He didn't, for the most part, didn't make excuses, but it's crazy to see him with that L. We just haven't seen that. We haven't seen a loss. We haven't seen Fury react to a loss, even though the Ngannou fight was like a loss, but it wasn't.
Yeah, I've been impressed with him. I mean, I didn't see that one stupid remark that you'd mentioned, but other than that, I think he's been very humble in defeat. I think he wears it well, and like you said, he's a fighter. He comes from a fighting family. His father headbutted a guy this week. Like they fight.
Yeah, but like a kid. It was not a guy. That was like a kid.
Yeah, well, whatever. It doesn't matter. I mean, he's a 65-year-old man headbutting, you know, 20-year-olds. Like they're fighting.
Fucking
they're fighting
wild,
family,
man.
And that's like nothing to them. That's like a regular Saturday for John Fury. And that's just the way these guys are. So, and just like I keep harping on that one interview that Tyson did. He goes, look at my face. Yeah, we beat the brains out of each other for 12 rounds. Yeah,
love that.
Look at my face. Whatever. I'm gonna go to the bar. I'm gonna have a few pints, and then I'm gonna go to my manager, and we're gonna figure things out. That dude, you can't handle that better. That is the perfect answer in my book for what you do after a fight, especially when you're a guy who's got so many wins and for so long has been so dominant.
So long.
It's just crazy that both these guys are 35 plus which, you know, just it begs the questions: how much more of these two are we going to see? And what happens when these younger, hungry guys, the Ergovichs of the world, step up? I mean, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, Usyk spanks Ergovich. I don't know that. I don't know if Joshua gets by Ergovich, honestly. I don't know. You know,
well, so Ergovich fighting Dubois.
Right. And I don't know if Ergovich gets by Dubois. That's how these, guys, it's the heavyweight division. Anything can happen. And that's why, like, it's so exciting. Like, I'm getting excited in my voice talking about this because, guys, we have a live heavyweight division with stars and guys who can really fight and different styles from all over the world.
And a bankroller.
And a bankroller who is making the fights happen. Thank you, our friend Turki Alashik. Thank you for reminding me about him, Dan. I was getting too excited about the fights that are possible.
You got to mention him at least once on every. You got to mention him once on every podcast. The rematch. The rematch, I think, is. The rematch is out there. I think it's going to happen. How do you see the rematch between Usyk and Fury playing out? Who makes the adjustment? Will it be a continuation of this fight? Do you see Fury making the adjustments? Do you see Usyk just having his number?
No, I don't see Usyk just having his number. I really don't. I think that the adjustment that needed to be made, which I'm surprised he didn't do it last night, and would be needed to be made in the next fight, is that Fury needs to get physical in the second half. He boxed really well up the back foot early on. He spent 7 rounds boxing really well. Even if, you know, the first rounds obviously were nip and tuck and you could have gone either way. Obviously, I gave most of them to Usyk, but you gave most of them to Fury. But those rounds are super, super close. But then Fury took over. His boxing IQ took over. His ability, his fluidity took over. And I think if he had shifted from that into the more mauling, bear crawl, bear hug style right. that he used against Klitschko, I think he has a chance to win that fight down the stretch. Listen, guys, we're looking at a 7-5, 6-6 fight with a knockdown. If Fury doesn't get hurt, he probably wins the fight. So that's why go back and say, hey, this next fight, you know, Usyk's got his number. He's just going to do it again. It's like, why? Well, yeah, can he hurt him again? Guys, it's not a foregone conclusion. If you hurt a guy once, doesn't mean you can hurt him again. Doesn't always mean that. So there's going to be adjustments made on both sides, and it's going to be very tactical for them. I'm very impressed with Usyk's ability to have a game plan and execute, which has always been the case. He knew what he wanted to do. So he started low to the body, worked his way up, and then brought the power. He fought. I was mentioning this on the live show I did last night. He fought in a power position all night long. And what I mean by that is that he came forward, right? He backed Fury up. And I think a lot of people were surprised, about myself included. But he fought in a position that was very powerful. So his chin was tucked. He's got his hands up. He's not going to take clean punches that he doesn't see. He's going to get touched for sure, and he did. But he's also in a position to fire back and be strong. He's got his feet underneath him. He's heavy. He was heavy on that front foot. He was being the aggressor. That type of position, yeah, you're going to take more flack, but you're going to be in a position to land power punches. He came out knowing that he could hurt Fury once he got to him. And he didn't lose. Yeah. He didn't get discouraged. Did not get discouraged. He kept beating the drum until the drum broke. And he broke him in round 9.
I am really excited about the rematch. I thought the rematch clause at first was silly. I was like, okay, Fury should win. And then the script says, all right, like, give me Joshua Fury, especially with Turki Alashik involved.
And we're going to have a rematch. That was the script. That was
the rematch now makes sense. Yeah, I'm excited for a rematch. I want to see a rematch. There's a lot of questions now. They're talking about it happening in October. Okay, that's just another great fight that we have on the 2024 boxing schedule. The adjustments that need to be made.
What? Nose. October.
Okay, so maybe December or maybe early 2025. But I'm excited for a rematch. I think the fans are excited for a rematch. I think both guys are excited for a rematch for a number of reasons. Like we just said, money, motivation. Fury beats Usyk. He can say, okay, I'm still the best. Usyk can just solidify it once again and make a massive bag. And I also think it's a justifiable rematch where we've seen nothing but unjustifiable rematches lately in the sport. What does it mean for Joshua? Anthony Joshua was ringside. Once again, Joshua is sitting there going, okay, who do I got now? Like, he is penciled in to fight in September. Hergovic is fighting Dubois on June 1st. That's for the vacant IBF title that's now going to be relinquished. Hergovic, Dubois, awesome fight. Hergovic's the favorite. But Dubois is dangerous. Let's say Hergovic wins. Now we can see Joshua versus Hergovic sometime in the fall. They're talking about doing it at Wembley. Not an easy fight for Joshua. Hrgović's a beast. Let's say Joshua gets through that. Then the winner of Fury and Usyk 2 should get Joshua. It just kind of delayed the timeline a little bit. I think fans were really hungry for a Joshua-Fury fight, but also are not going to complain when they see just like one guy win a fight in the way that Usyk did.
We're looking at a year away for that fight now.
I know. The timeline has been moved.
It's a year from now.
And Joshua was a guy with so much momentum now, and Hrgović fight is a fun fight. It's for an IBF title. I don't know how much it motivates fans out there. I don't know how much it motivates Joshua. I know he could become a champion again. He could be a four-time heavyweight champion. Is that correct? I always make one tiny mistake on this show. Whatever. Multiple time. He's won it once against Klitschko. He lost it against Ruiz, and then he won it again against Ruiz.
That's two.
So he's a two-time heavyweight champ.
Yeah, I was going to say four.
He hasn't won it again. Right. He lost to Usyk twice to get back the title. Well, no, he lost the title to Usyk, and then he lost the rematch. So he would be a three-time heavyweight champion if he beats Hrgović, which is pretty fucking cool.
That's historic. Yeah.
But then that could set up another undisputed fight with potentially Usyk, which is where now we're just getting like into 2026 all that.
Also, there were so many steps and so many branches off that the things can go wrong because this is – first of all, it's boxing. Second of all, it's heavyweights. So anything can happen. Hrgović could get knocked out by Dubois. And then the whole timeline changes, you know?
Joshua Dubois at Wembley's awesome. I just think Joshua's like, you know, he's on his own timeline. And I do want to see Fury Joshua, even if they don't fight. I still want to see Joshua Wilder. Like, I think we've penetrated through. Weird word. Pause. I think we've gotten through penetrate. Through the whole like mythical heavyweights, and now it's just like let's just have them all fight. Like I think fans have now gotten past like okay if they lose, who cares? Let's see them fight again. Like if Wilder beats Zhang somehow, like Wilder Joshua has legs. Fury, I still want to see Fury Joshua. I think these guys all understand that they're in their mid to late 30s, some of them. Just give us these fights. There's still interest in them. There's still money to be made on them. It's just gonna take a little bit longer.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a lot of good things that are going to happen in between. Like to our point, Dan, like the sport is alive and well, and we have heavyweights that are good, and they're fighting each other, and we have Turkoglu Sheik who's making these fights available and optionable, and they're also staying busy. I love that. Like Zhang just lost to Parker, and he's right back against Wilder. Wilder just lost to Parker, you know, and they're back fighting each other. So it's like even you don't have to win. He's trying to make the best fights possible, and it's great for the sport. Because usually a loss, especially at heavyweight, and you go off into the yonder and you come back somehow, some way. But now it's not like that. These guys are getting paid. They're putting on good fights and they're hungry. So it's a good thing. And there's a lot of good options along the way. Yeah, of course, we always want the biggest and the baddest and the best fights possible with all these huge names. But like you said, Joshua's on his own timeline, always is. He's a brand much more than any other heavyweight in the world. The Joshua train is long and strong. So what he does, he's kind of outside of his own, doing his own thing. If he's able to get into the mix with these two, but it seems like he's shut out at least for a bit.
Mm-hmm. I think Joshua, there's two things. It's the Hrgović Dubois winner with a world title on the line. Or if Wilder beats Zhang, then it's Joshua Wilder. And I like either one of those.
Yep.
And it's just, like you said,
heavyweight. I'd rather Hrgović, honestly. I feel bad for that guy. I feel like he needs a shot.
No, if Hrgović wins, I think Joshua Hrgović is the move at Wembley.
It's going to be hard
for the title, heavyweight title. Hrgović will have that signature win. He'll have momentum.
Sliding Wilder in there, dude, just because of name recognition. Unfortunately,
I can see that too.
Kicked to the side once again.
That's the next big one over in Saudi. It's June 1st. It's supposed to be Bivol Beterbiev. Imagine Bivol Beterbiev on this run that we're on. Like, we're still going to get that this year, hopefully. But that would have been June 1st. But now it's Zhang versus Wilder as the main event of the 5-on-5, awesome, which is going to be the next.
Greedy. We can be greedy. I want it all now, guys.
Next weekend is Josh Taylor versus Catterall, which like doesn't have the same sizzle. Like I'll tune in. I don't think it's gonna be a good fight. Like I think they should just can it. Like they're saying it's like the big, just can it. Like they're saying it's the biggest rivalry in boxing. No, it's not.
No.
2 years ago, yes. The first fight sucked, and this one is not gonna be much better. But I'll still watch. It's next weekend. It's like a low impact Memorial Day.
Damn, you have to watch, dude. This is your job.
That's true. I know. I don't know if we're going to do a show next weekend.
Don't let him game you. Don't let him think he's doing you any
favors. No, of course I'm going to watch. Of course I'm going to watch. Let's quickly talk about ESPN, the main event. Emmanuel Navarrete upset by Denis Berenchik. What a week for the Ukrainians, from Usyk to Lomachenko to Denis Berenchik, who, if you watched our show last week, I told you that he has the skills and he has the style to upset Navarrete, who is so hot and cold. First fight at 135, he decided to be cold. He only threw 50 punches around after averaging 70 punches thrown in his previous 14 fights, Navarrete. He looked horrible. The fight wasn't great. Happy for Berenchik for getting that win, and now he has some big fights for him at lightweight. But for Navarrete, maybe it was the weight, first fight at 135. Maybe it was the wear and tear. The guy's just so hot and cold. As much as I want to give credit to Berenchik, we have to talk about how bad Navarrete looked. He was in line for some big fights. We talked about it being a trap fight. All the above, I think, affected Navarrete. He has to go back to the drawing board. But Denis Berenchik, Ukrainian, part of that awesome Ukrainian Olympic team, which was Usyk, him, Vadzik, and Lomachenko, now a world champ. Huge fights for him, and probably will get made because he's not going to ask for a lot of money. But man, Navarrete looked like trash.
Yeah, I was watching through one eye open because it was so late and we had a long day of...
I didn't watch it. I'm going to be dead honest with you guys.
I watched it through one eye open last night, and I was... First of all, the very first thing I noticed when I pulled these guys in the ring, I'm like, who are these two doughboys fighting for a world title? Like, they're both soft. Like, they're just like...
Navarrete's body is just nothing there.
Horrible. He looks like a mini...
Like, I have a better body than that guy.
He looks like a mini Tyson Fury at this point, honestly. He's got these long, gangly arms and this just soft midsection. But Berenchik wasn't much better. He was soft as well. Like, I'm like, who are these little chubby guys who are fighting for a world title? And the fight was just not good, not contested at a high level. Navarrete looked... He looked like he was two weight classes out of his realm, out of his depth. And he is. So I said he looked human at 30. At 35, he looks terrible. And I don't think he's going to do anything at 35 with anybody. If you can't beat a guy like Denis Berenchik, no offense to Denis Berenchik, but he's not going to be able to hang with any of those guys at 135, the top tip-top guys. Keyshawn Davis calling out Berenchik. I'll fight you now. I'll fight him right now. I'm sure you will.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure you will.
These other guys are salivating right now.
Of course. I mean, you got a title fight. That's low hanging fruit at this point, especially in a weight class like that. The problem with Keyshawn Davis calling out that guy is he might get the fight, and then he wins that fight, and then guess what? You got to fight those other guys.
He refuses to fight Shakur because they're friends.
Yeah. Okay. F that. Money. Money.
Right.
Money,
that, I mean, money. That for now.
But again, I always tell all these young guys, I can't wait for my moment. I can't wait for my moment. I'm like, hey, dude, as soon as you take that half step into that moment, there's no looking back. Everything is up, 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 up. As soon as you step into that upper echelon, there's no more step backs unless you want to retire, unless you want to get out. Now you got to fight better and better and better guys. And at 35, the better guys are deep. You're looking at the Shakur Stevensons. You're looking at Lomachenko. You're looking at Gervonta Davis. You know, like, you're looking at Zepeda. Yeah, that guy's a beast, man. And we keep forgetting to mention him in the 35 pounders, but he's a beast.
Yeah, he's a beast. And now Top Rank has a kind of a little conundrum because I don't think they thought Berenchik was going to win. No. I think they were angling for...
On last week's show, we were talking about like this. You know, Top Rank's smart. They're picking this guy for a reason because they want to make Navarrete, and they want a four-division world champion. So now he's historic Mexican, and he's going to get in with any one of these guys, whether it's Shakur.
No, they wanted Top Rank wanted Berenchik. I mean, Top Rank wanted Navarrete versus Lomachenko. Now, Berenchik, no offense to him, versus Lomachenko is not a big fight. Berenchik versus Shakur Stevenson.
They probably don't want to do that either.
Right. Berenchik versus Shakur, not really a big fight. Does this now tip, gives a little bit more leverage to Shakur in terms of getting maybe a one fight deal after this fight is up in July to fight Lomachenko? Interesting times there. So see how that all plays out. Gervonta Davis is not fighting Denis Berenchik anytime soon. So that's interesting to see. Who?
I think he'll get fed to Shakur.
Who? Berenchik?
Yeah.
Yeah. If Shakur, he has to work out that deal with Top Rank.
We'll give you the Berenchik fight. You get to pick up another title. And then, but you got to sign with us for at least a three fight deal. And the second fight is.
And then Lomachenko is part of it.
Yeah. Lomachenko will be the second fight. And then there'll be a third fight with an option. That would make the most sense. Shakur doesn't have to do that, obviously, but that would make the most sense.
Yeah, it was a great day of fights. It was a long day of fights. We were on that chat at 12 noon. Upsets, yes. On the other one, we saw Caballo, defeat Frank Sanchez, who I think was hurt. I thought he had a knee problem. Sanchez, he clearly was not 100%.
Yeah, liver problem at the end.
We saw Sergey Kovalev get sent to the shadow realm in the 12th round, which I personally enjoyed. We saw Joe Cardina upset.
Wow.
By Anthony, what was his last name?
Kakache.
Northern Ireland guy.
Kakache.
Kakache.
The beating that Joe Cardina took, that is potentially career altering. He was getting beat from pillar to post. He showed absolutely zero defense. Getting hit to the head with really hard shots, was hurt throughout, getting hurt to the body multiple times throughout the fight, consistently, actually. Mm-hmm. With a guy who only has seven knockouts and is able to batter you that way.
He looked big in there, though.
Yeah, well, no, Joe looks small. That's really
good. The other guy was just rangy, and like there was that moment where the ref kind of let a late hit, and I kind of messed up Cardina. You know, I didn't really rate Cardina that high. That Ogawa knockout is looking just like very, very sus. If you really want to
punch hard before that, he hasn't punched hard after that. He's had a majority and a split decisions then, and then got beat up in this fight over the weekend. And he ices a guy like Ogawa, who's a badass former world champion, with one punch, one of the best knockouts you're ever going to see. Like he looked, he was throwing a baseball pitch from the mound when he knocked him out. Like it was
insane. You can make your own assumptions there. But Cardina gets upset. It was a day of upsets. Brian Norman on the ESPN portion. That was an awesome fight with Santillan.
Did you watch that one yet? Absolutely.
I had it on in the background. I was just kind of putzing around the apartment.
Hard to watch. And Santillan is a really nice kid, and
he took a beating.
Blood. He was cut over the eye. Both eyes, nose bleeding.
When he went down, his brain looked scrambled, like the blood. That's when I was like, sometimes when I watch this sport, especially on like hour 12 of it, and I see that, like, I'm kind of just like, man, this sport is so freaking brutal. Man. And I'm sitting here watching it. From the standpoint of how I watch it, I'm like, damn, this guy's brain is scrambled. There's blood coming from every freaking part of his body. And he just lost a big fight.
Cool guy that he was definitely supposed to
be. Right. Like, they were angling, and at 147, they're angling that guy. It's such a wide open division, and he had such an awesome win over Rocha. Yeah, well, great day of fights.
Because Norman was coming off the Janelson Figueroa Boca Chica fight, which guy that we had on Pro Box, and he got dropped and was getting hurt, and they stopped it on a cut or no contest. So it looked like to me that Topper was like, all right, let's get this guy out of here. And then Santillan, who's been streaking, I mean, just he dropped the bag. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, Norman from what I've seen of him, I was never like super impressed with him, but I knew he had a lot of potential in him. He has a great night. That's just the one side of the sport and the other side. Santillan down, Norman up. Long day of boxing. That's what we do here at Inside Boxing Live. Thank you to PPV.com. The next one is June 15th. In terms of what they're carrying, we'll be back later in the week for that Taylor Catterall preview and some other news and notes. There'll probably be some fallout from this heavyweight title fight. Now the IBF is going to strip Usyk at some point, and we're going to hear more from Fury. We're going to hear more from Usyk. Maybe Usyk retires. Maybe they announce a rematch. There's so much that's going to happen in the next couple days. There's so much going to happen in boxing in the next couple days. It's an awesome time to be a fan of this sport. Let's all just kind of relish in it, because how much BS do we put up with as fans? Let's all just say, hey, life is good right now. Life is good in terms of boxing. I'm sure something will happen this week too that we will say, man, I hate this sport. But for right now, in this very moment, on Sunday, May 19th at 1:25 p.m., we are happy, happy fans, Chris.
Feast or famine, I love this sport. We're currently in a feast. The famine will come again, guys. The famine will come again. And we're still going to be here.
What a line. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs unless you want to talk about this unbelievable run. We're out.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.